Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Seth, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. I believe it was Florio who floated this out there. The possibility, the NFL is amazing. Like, the NFL is ready to vulture in on whatever days open up on the calendar if these other levels of football cancel. Like, I think on the one hand, the NFL wants college football to happen in some shape, form, or fashion because it'll make the scouting easier, especially on the conferences that really matter, you know, like the SEC. But on the other hand, if college football cancels things altogether, then the NFL is sitting on the cusp of being able to recoup hundreds of millions of dollars by swooping in and taking those Saturday broadcast windows, which they have sort of a handshake agreement not to do right now during college football season. Same way they've got a similar type of wink-wink to not do on Fridays because of high school football around the country. Well, we don't know if high school football is going to get on the field either. I think it's reasonable to wonder that. Florio floats the idea out there, the NFL considering putting games on Friday nights as well.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this. And honestly, I feel like it's more of a... Okay, real quick, by way of explanation, there's an act that Congress passed in the 1950s or 60s as something like the Sports TV Broadcasting Act that prevents college... It prohibits the NFL from playing on Saturdays, and I think while college football is being played. And apparently nobody believes it would ever actually hold up in court, but for the most part, the NFL has said, like, look, we're not gonna try to compete with college football.
Right.
I think that this would be a move if you're going to, if college football had been canceled, then by all means go play on Saturdays. I don't think you can play on Friday nights just because a bunch of high school football teams aren't playing, as long as any high school football teams are playing, because that's your lifeblood in terms of those are the people that you want to be able to watch the games play. Some young kid in Texas who's playing football on Friday night, you want him to watch the games on Sunday. I feel like that's too much of a money grab if the NFL's playing on Fridays, because those guys, the very lifeblood of your sport, which are the future fans, your future players, your future coaches, all those guys, they're learning their craft on Friday nights, or they're learning to love the game on Friday nights. I don't want to compete with that.
How janky is a schedule for an NFL player with a week of having a Friday game? And what I mean by that, Seth, is we know NFL players already know what the deal is with Thursday weeks. Like, it's just, you know, you're going to have one of them at least every year. Most players I've talked to are like, okay, this is terrible. We got to go play in 3 days. It is what it is. My guess is that the mandate that each team play a Thursday game does not go away if the league starts plunking games down on Fridays, because they're not moving off of Thursdays for sure. That's a TV contract that is in place and is incredibly lucrative. Is a Friday game basically just like a souped up Thursday game in some ways?
I guess it's one extra day of rest. It would still feel weird. I wonder.
But as a player, you're already going to have to play a Thursday game. Now, if you're adding a Friday game, you know, six weeks later, like,
yeah,
how weird does it start to get for players if you're starting to mix all these weird days in?
It gets weird. I don't know. I'm torn on that, because the really good teams, or the really famous teams, I guess, like the Cowboys, even when they're not good, they play so many primetime games that they have to deal with that all the time, where their schedule's always a little bit off. But yeah, it does. I don't think players would be happy about it if you're doing that Thursday night plus another Friday night games at some point. And it is just, I don't think fans should be happy about it, including the Thursday night game, because of the prospect of, on any given Thursday night game, the chance of your quarterback, say, getting a concussion on Sunday and then getting out of the concussion protocol by Thursday, it's just about impossible.
Yeah.
And there's too many times where those games are pretty much determined by the fact that somebody can't get out of the concussion protocol by Thursday or any other kind of sprained ankle or anything like that. So you start adding that into the mix in the sport of football, and it just makes injuries which are already disproportionate influence on the outcome of games, it becomes even that bigger of an influence.
Mark Cuban said this one time about the NFL, and there have been different points since he said this where the NFL has, where it's looked kind of prophetic in that he said the NFL is one of these leagues that, you know, there's an old saying, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And I do think that there is something to the NFL, because there's been a lot of talk through the years, like, why wouldn't the NFL just play a game every night if the ratings are this good? Just plunk games down every night and you go play, completely ignoring the physical effects of doing that and how hard it would be to put a schedule together. I do think there is something to that. When I hear of them playing on a Friday night, I go, okay, so now you're going to have NFL football on Monday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday night is already, to me, the least desirable night to sit and watch TV. Like, that's a night where we like to go out. I think a lot of people like to go out. It's thought to be, among all the nights, kind of the afterthought night. And for NFL football, Seth, I just think that Saturday is fine, because that's already a day you're conditioned to watch football in some shape, form, or fashion with college. Friday night, now you're creating a fifth night where you're watching the NFL. Like, I don't know how interested I'd be in making that a fifth night of the week where I'm sitting down and watching NFL football.
Yeah, and it's just too much. And I think that, you know, sometimes we say, like with the expanded playoffs, or no, the 17th game. With the 17th game, we figure, okay, we're going to object to this, but once you have the 17th game, it's going to be life as usual, and everybody's going to be cool with it. I think that'll probably be it. It hasn't been that way with Thursday night football. I don't think anybody, like, nobody has ever completely loved Thursday night football. And you do have to, I think if you're the NFL, at some point, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I honestly still don't know what that means. I kind of know what it means, but I don't understand the distinction between pigs and hogs there.
Hogs are gluttonous.
But it's a pig. But a hog is a pig.
Like, is it?
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand it. I started to Google what does, and it replaced my autofill was, instead of what does WAP mean?
Well, it's an old saying. I'm not here to vet Mark Cuban's saying.
No. I'm angry at Mark Cuban because I still don't understand the difference between the pig and the fat. But anyway, sometimes you're going to – like, leagues do change in popularity. For a long, long time, baseball was the most popular professional sport in America. And then football changed it.
Yeah.
And there's things you can do along the way to change it again if you're not careful. And that would be kind of reckless.
Did Brooks Raley bail Dusty Baker out of what would have been his worst morning yet as Astros manager? We will discuss that. We'll hear from Dusty Baker as well next. Indeed, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610 on a Thursday. Darren Revelle will join us at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, as he always does. Bill O'Brien on tomorrow at 8 with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans Training Camp Live. J.J. Watt will be on with the guys tomorrow afternoon. It's here, man. It's like Christmas morning tomorrow. Training camp is here. Practice gets started tomorrow. Football will be here soon. Coronavirus tests are very, very few positives out there. So it's really, really good. Good things going on right now. And the Texans, Seth, go into the season for the first time in the Bill O'Brien era with the same five starting offensive linemen. This is a good thing in this offseason where continuity is going to be really, really important, especially along the offensive line. Tytus Howard met with the media earlier this week. And a few interesting things from Tytus Howard here. First, he was asked if he had any advice for the newest Texan offensive lineman, rookie Charlie Heck. Here's what second-year offensive lineman Tytus Howard had to say. Oh, okay. Well,
he's giving him the silent treatment.
No, I was getting, yeah.
It's a vet move right now. Tytus already acting like he's just like, I'm not helping
you,
rookie.
Oh, whoops.
No,
my bad. This is my bad. I had panned down to the wrong segment. Yes, I teased. I'm looking at the 8:30 segment on the rundown.
Oh, okay.
I just messed up. Ben, this is on me. This is not on you.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my search history on Google.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no,
not,
yeah.
Not,
no, I blame Seth
either
for distracting me with his search history on Google during the break. No, Ben, this is on me, not on you. We are scheduled to talk about Dusty Baker and Brooks Raley right here. And Dusty Baker did
Brooks Raley, who by now, so Brooks Raley, I would imagine at least 25% of the Astros fan base thinks that he's the next Cy Young winner because he's
count me among them.
He's just dominant, right?
Yeah.
I've never seen, like, he's the next Blake Taylor, right? Oh, well, okay, hold off a little bit on that.
Hey, yeah. Here's the advice Brooks Raley gave to Charlie Heck of the Houston Texans. No, I'm just kidding. Brooks Raley, of course, was left in the game last night by Dusty Baker just to lay out the situation. Ben is having a heart attack in there. I'm sorry about that, Ben. That's my fault. Brooks Raley pitched his first appearance for the Astros last night, got the last two outs of the seventh inning, went in the dugout, and was not supposed to come back out for the eighth inning, but he did, while Josh James also came in from the bullpen. And so there was some confusion. Brooks really had to stay in the game. As it turns out, he got a 1-2-3 inning in the eighth inning, but Dusty Baker explained afterwards the confusion going on with the pitching situation.
The plan was to have James pitch the eighth. And, you know, because they had a couple of righties up there, and, you know, figured he had done his job. I was writing down James on my lineup card because I write down, you know, everything. Strami was writing down how many pitches he had, and next thing, and I went over and gave him some knuckles and said, great job. But I guess, you know, he doesn't know me. Next thing I looked out there, he was on the field. He was the first one on the field. And I said, oh, man, you're done. And then the umpire came over and said, hey, man, you know, he has to face one batter, you know, since he crossed the line. But he was so psyched. Like I said, he was the first one on the field, but it worked out great, because he closed out the eight.
Awfully tough for me to criticize Dusty right here, considering I just did the equivalent with our show. I sent the wrong segment out there to go pitch the eighth inning instead. But at any rate, if Brooks Raley had gone out there in the eighth inning and even, you know, put a guy on base that opened the gates for an inning where the Giants end up coming back, we would be crucifying Dusty Baker this morning.
Right, yeah. This was a beneficial mistake. This was one of those things, like, it happens in science, right? When you leave something out and all of a sudden you discover penicillin.
Right.
That's what Brooks Raley is. He's penicillin, and Dusty Baker discovered him quite by accident.
Yeah.
I'm actually honestly a little bit frustrated by this, Sean, because even though it worked out, because he was about to send Josh James, there's a very good chance, and we all damn well know it, that Dusty Baker was about to blow that game wide open by sending Josh James out there.
So that's why I ask why. I want to be clear. Were you more angry that Josh James was the one coming in, or are you more angry over Dusty Baker assuming that Raley didn't understand the universal sign of you're done for the day being knuckles?
I'm also offended by the fact that this is the first time I've ever heard it called knuckles.
Yeah.
I just, like, fist bump, dap, whatever.
Knuckles.
That's not a dap. I've never heard it called knuckles before. So certainly something that people have only been doing widespread for the last 5-10 years or so, like widespread, is not already universally recognized as, like, hit the showers, Raley. What the hell is that? I don't get that at all.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal. I also, though, I'm almost wondering if Brooks Raley, who spent the last 5 years in Korea, was like, you know, screw that, I'm going back out there.
Yeah, there's only one way for me to hold on to this major league spot, and that's to go take the bull by the horns, baby.
This is my shot. He's going to try to start tonight. he's going to go up to Javier before the game, or tomorrow night. He's going to go up to Javier and be like, hey, by the way, did you hear? Dusty said I'm starting.
Yeah. Javier's in the hallway, and he gets galoolied by somebody.
Yeah.
With a mask on and a Raley jersey. Like, wait, who was that? Nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't want to make too much of it. It worked out really well. And look, Raley, you signed 4 days ago.
Yeah.
I'd rather have Raley out there, I suppose, than Castellanos or some other double-A, single-A pitcher that doesn't have nearly as much experience.
Raley was getting a lot of love the day they traded for him, and we barely talked about it because, as you mentioned, Seth, the guy's a journeyman. He spent more time in Korea than he has in the United States pitching baseball. And it was getting a lot of love on the text page from more than a couple people saying, no, this is a guy who kind of fits what the Astros' mode, you know, spin rate and things like. He's got one of those spin rates. He's got one of those spin rates that the Astros put a guy like this through their car wash, and he comes out the other side as an effective major league pitcher. So I'm willing to see. And he's a lefty, which helps. So I'm willing to see what it all turns into for Brooks Raley. And he was good last night, man. He came in, and he did a nice job for an inning and two-thirds.
He played for Lotte, the Korean baseball league, which I'm guessing in Korea those are all named after companies, right?
As I like to call them, Doosan's bitch.
How's Hart Doucet?
I have no idea. You keep talking. I'm going to go check. I got to make sure.
It was funny. Like, as Brooks Rally went out there last night, I was like, oh, he played a lot in Korea, huh? I guess I'm going to have to – just like I claimed I was watching Korea baseball, I'm going to have to claim I know a whole lot about Brooks Rally right now.
They're in third place right now. They're four
third
games.
Third place? Yeah, what the hell? That's it. I'm done. I'm done. Sean, I'm done. You know, every damn year I go in and I'm like, all right, this is the year. This is a year for Doucet. And sure, we've had some championships, but I need a championship every damn year. What am I even paying for?
They're 45-33-2. So apparently, apparently you can have ties in Korean baseball.
Who's first? Oh, that's a smart move. Maybe it's just, you know what, though? I bet maybe it's just this year, Sean.
Yeah, maybe.
Because of the COVID.
It could be. NC is first. Kaiwoom is second. Doucet third. Latte. Of course, they're our bitch. Latte sixth. Losers.
Yeah, but I don't. Yeah, but now Brooks Rally. That's what Brooks Rally spent 5 years with Latte.
That's okay.
Well, I don't like that.
And he knew to get the hell out of there.
Is one of the teams in that league Samsung?
Yes, they're eighth right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, you know how much he could sell the naming rights to an actual team,
like over here,
instead of because like those teams are all named after corporations.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the Chicago Bears started off back when they were in Canton or Decatur or somewhere. They were actually named the name of the company that George Hall has worked for, and then they changed it to Chicago. I bet you could sell the naming rights to the Cowboys, like
are
instead
we
of the Dallas Cowboys. If you sold that to a corporation, you could sell that for hundreds of millions.
Are we ready for that over here as fans? I feel like we're very parochial about our geography.
I think you could pull it off with the Raiders and the Raiders.
because the Raiders, they change every 5 years.
Raiders
anyway.
Fans would be like, hell yeah, that's awesome. That's us.
Absolutely, Apple. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the Apple
Actually, Raiders would probably be a much more lowbrow brand. You know what I mean? Like, the Fleshlight Raiders. Hell yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. This is, you know, that segment that I started 6 minutes ago? We're going to do that in the next segment here. Pretty soon our show is going to be sponsored by something like that if I keep conducting myself this way. Without a doubt, the biggest difference in how we view one area of the Texans versus another is this area of the Texans. I've already kind of told you what it is, but I'll tell you full bore next. Hey, so the offensive line for the Texans should be able to do this one. We already had a dress rehearsal for the first part of this segment. Titus Howard met with the media earlier this week. And Seth, I think one of the parts of the team that I'm most excited about is this offensive line in year two. And you think about it, this time a year ago, Titus Howard was a rookie who was running at left guard. And we were mentally preparing ourselves for a year where Julion Davenport and Matt Khalil might be the two tackles for this team. How times have changed.
I forgot. Then we traded Julion Davenport straight up for Laremy Tunsil.
There was some other stuff in there, but that's how I looked at it.
I look at it as
hell of a trade.
Julion Davenport for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills, straight up.
That's right. Yeah,
nothing
to
see here.
That's right. The Dolphins were able to squeeze Johnson Batamosi out of the Texans as well. There were some draft picks, too, I'm pretty sure, but that's pretty much what the deal was. So Titus Howard met with the media. He was asked an interesting question, especially because he's a second-year player. He's not a veteran yet where you think of him as somebody who's giving advice to young players, but he was asked, what advice did you give or would you give to rookie Charlie Heck, who the Texans drafted in the fourth round?
The main thing I told Charlie was just, you know, be himself. You know, he played left tackle in college, and, you know, here he's going to be playing left swing, left hand, right. And the biggest, you know, advice I can give him is be patient. With me, I seen last year, like, sometimes I was trying to do a little too much. So the biggest thing I learned from Laremy was just to be patient and let the game come to you.
See, this is where football players, Seth, are just generally better people than I am, is when I think of that, I think, look, Titus Howard is in no danger of losing his job to Charlie Heck, but there would probably be a level of paranoia with me where I'd be like, look, he is somebody who could take my job if I underperform a little bit. So what advice would you give to Charlie Heck? Well, what I told him was Bill O'Brien really likes it when you give him wet willies. He loves it when you bring up the Hopkins trade. You should ask him about the Hopkins trade.
Just
give him a ton of really crappy advice so that you know, this will take care of Charlie Heck. I don't have to worry about this Charlie Heck guy anymore. What did you think of that advice for Charlie Heck?
I like it. You know what? I think when he's given that advice, and when you hear somebody saying to be patient, I think maybe if you if you don't necessarily know offensive line play or what have you, it might sound just like, hey, be patient in life or be patient, you know, and your time will come. I think pretty much what he's actually talking about is what happens with rookies a lot of times is that they have a tendency to be – rookie offensive linemen have a tendency at times to be over-aggressive. Either that or they don't trust themselves and they're not confident, so they're jumping out and lunging at players. They're kicking outside too much instead of protecting their inside closer to the football, all those things. And that is what got Titus Howard, like any other rookie offensive lineman, in trouble at times, would be when he would get a little out of his – he'd get a little out over his feet, and that's when he had his bad plays. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean – It's hard for offensive linemen because they come from a situation in college where a lot of times they can just manhandle people and they can get away with being overly aggressive. And you learn when you get to the NFL that, man, most of your really, really good offensive linemen aren't necessarily always all that. They pick and choose when to be aggressive. More than anything, it's a matter of just playing within your technique and your framework and letting the defensive lineman come to you in the passing game as a pass protector. So I saw Titus improve in that every single week. I thought that he looked more like a veteran player with each successive week during the season. It was a shame he got hurt because I think he was really about to turn the corner and come into his own. And Max was kind of the same way throughout the entire season. That's what's so exciting about those guys is that I thought last year that, hey, Brian Gaines' draft set up the Texans well to be better in 2021. Or excuse me, 2020.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was before the Laramie.
You did. You said that a year ago. You said that.
Yeah. I remember I went on Matt Weston's podcast for Battle Red Blog, and I convinced him to be optimistic about the 2020 Texans offensive line. Now, that was before the Laramie Tunsil trade. And what happened was I think both those rookies ended up making more progress faster than I thought they would. And then you also added Laramie Tunsil to the mix to where they were a respectable pass-protecting offensive line last year. And they weren't, if you look at how they graded out in the run game, it wasn't as good, but I think that they made progress in the run game. And regardless of what the yards per carry was or how Max Sharping and Laramie Tunsil had, you know, 5 yards per carry when they ran to the left, but it wasn't as good on the right, whatever. I don't care about any of that. I saw them move as a unit more last year. Like, I saw them work as a cohesive group that knew what the guy next to him was doing in a way that I really hadn't seen in a few years, and I was getting very, very sick of it. I thought that Devlin did a good job of coaching up some actually quality young offensive linemen, and I'm very optimistic about the offensive line this year.
Yeah, speaking of Devlin, Titus Howard said he did a lot of self-scouting during his recovery from the knee injury.
I know the offseason for me, since I wasn't able to do as much as, you know, because I was recovering from a knee injury. So I think with me, it was more film study and then watching, like, what did I do to get beat on the plays I did get beat on and how can I improve that? And, you know, looking at other guys who've been successful in the NFL before and watching how they go about pass blocking and what can I do to, you know, be on the same level as those guys because I want to be one of the greats. So I watched the greats, and I got one of the best on my team at left tackle, Laramie. So I try to watch and see how patient he is, how he stay inside out. You know, Coach Devlin always, you know, coaching me to stay inside out and stuff like that. So I think for me, that's the biggest part of my game is being patient, staying inside out, and, you know, just playing a game that, you know, my coach is coaching me to play. So I think that's going to help me out in this year too, and I'm looking forward to, you know, helping my offensive line.
Seth, a little disappointed he didn't stand up and show us exactly what inside out means and do a demonstration like Devlin did when you asked him about coaching the blindside blocks.
Right, yeah. And he was when he's saying inside out, that's the cardinal sin in as an offensive lineman is getting beat to the inside. So if you're the right tackle, that means you get beat to your left side because that's the direct line to the quarterback.
Yep.
So it's always that kind of goes along the lines of what he was saying, his advice to the rookies to be patient. It all goes with that. It's a lot easier. You make things harder for yourself if all of a sudden you leap out at the defensive end and then you've got a gaping wide chasm between you and the guard versus just like, I'm going to hang out here right next to my buddy, the guard, and I'll just take a survey of the landscape and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's time, my friend.
That's right.
And you know the thing I like about Tytus Howard is he has an ability to sound like a young guy, but also very mature at the same time.
Yeah, he's very measured. He's
It's dangerous, though. It's dangerous in being too impressed with an offensive lineman in interviews. Because I'm trying to remember, who was the offensive lineman?
Oh, Kendall Lamb.
Kendall Lamb. McClain and Meltzer were just so impressed with Kendall Lamb.
He was a good interview.
They felt like he was going to block people with their interviews or something.
I think the Texans thought he was going to do that.
They put him at left tackle
to start the season in 2017.
Fast forward. Well, that was partly because of injury. But then in that game.
And Dwayne was holding out, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It was Dwayne was holding out. Yeah. Yeah, that was the game where he got he just stopped playing in the middle of a play.
Yeah, he did a really nice job blocking a Jaguar to the ground and then stood and looked at his handiwork while the play was still going on.
like he was a badass
or
something.
Yeah, Jabo, he's like brushing his hands like, I'm done here. My work is done.
Clyde, oh, man, I'll never forget Clyde Simmons telling me once. I was talking to Clyde. And Clyde was like this old. So for those of you that remember, Clyde Simmons was one of those defensive linemen for the Eagles back when they were awesome with Reggie White and
Jerome Brown
and everything. But by the time I was a rookie, he was an old guy in Jacksonville. He was only supposed to play like 15, 20 snaps a game. Like it was just – he was on cruise control and he was just as smooth as hell. But he was talking about – sometime when he was a teenager and he was going through some town where like it was pretty clear, you know, especially back then, there's a lot of places in the South where it was pretty clear they didn't want black guys.
Probably shouldn't stop here. Yeah.
And somebody stopped in a pickup truck and said something to him. And, you know, he said, you gotta take care of your business, but then you gotta get the hell out as fast as you can.
And he said it just like that?
Yeah.
Like real smooth?
He's like the most laid-back, smooth guy. But basically told me a story about just beating the piss out of some guy that called him the N-word. But then, you know, you got to get out of there before you attract too much attention.
Got to the next town over. Yeah. Do you get a – let's play one more from Tytus Howard. Then I want to ask you this question. You actually like this cut that we're about to play from Tytus Howard when he was asked about making the all-rookie team despite only playing half the season.
It felt pretty good. Yeah, I can't lie. I didn't think I was going to make it because I didn't play 8 games. But to me, to be honest, like I wish I would have been here because, I mean, it's not to me about making all rookie. I wish I was here to play in the playoffs so it helped us, you know, beat the Chiefs. So, yeah, it felt good to make all rookie, but it would have been better for me to be able to play that second half of the season.
That's what Clyde said. I remember now. He said, like, you know, you don't sit there admiring your handiwork. You got to get the hell out of town.
That's really funny. Guy deserved it. It would make sense because they're both from Alabama. Tytus Howard went to Alabama State. Charles Barkley is from Alabama and went to Auburn. Did you get a bit of a Charles Barkley vibe off of Tytus Howard? We've had several texts bring that up, like just in terms of his cadence and the flow of the way he talks.
Can you play that again?
Play it one more time, Ben.
I know the off season for me, since I wasn't able to do as much as, you know, because I was recovering from a knee injury. So I think with me, it was more film study and then watching, like, what did I do to get beat on the plays I did get beat on.
No, I'm not getting it.
No? Okay.
Yeah, I don't get it. Are you getting it?
Maybe a little. The accent is similar, and that was probably not the best cut to play because there was one earlier where I go, he does sound a little like Barkley, a little
bit.
You'd
have to ask him, like, maybe next time there's a press conference, ask him how he thought the team played against Kansas City.
Ask him what he thinks of James Harden.
What do you?
So, Tytus, what do you think about small ball? Let me tell you something. Small ball is terrible.
I was thinking about just, you had to get him away, get him to say terrible.
Yeah.
It would have to be like, okay, how did Devlin say that you guys played in the playoff game versus Kansas
City? We need to get him to say terrible. That is what we need. Yeah. So, so I'm excited about the offensive line. I'm excited about Tytus Howard. I can't wait to get out to practice tomorrow. Can't wait to hear from JJ Watt on the station tomorrow with Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley. What do you want them to ask JJ tomorrow, Seth? If you get to plant a question or two with Clint and Show, what do you want to know from J.J. Watt? Anything in particular?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
What do you ask J.J.? I'd actually ask him. You know how these things go, these press conferences.
This is an interview on our station.
These interviews. Oh, yeah, I want to know. Okay, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so they'll have some time to just sit back. I honestly, I want to know – how much he thinks, like, his training from his tag show there, Ultimate Tag.
Ooh.
Like, if he's learned a lot, and if it's – how do I say this? I want to be able to ask it in a way that it doesn't sound like I'm pandering or something. But I've been very, very impressed with the way he's been speaking, like, in interviews and everything. He sounds like a professional broadcaster. And frankly, I want to be sure that his plan post-playing isn't to have the morning radio show on 6:10 a.m. Because I'll be looking elsewhere. I'm pretty sure it's not. I mean, they'll be like, hey, JJ, what do you want to do when you're done with your hundreds of millions of dollars? Like, oh, I want to wake up at 4 in the morning and right. be sure I catch up on all the Rockets.
I've always dreamt of working with Sean Pendergast. It's been my dream forever.
But he is. I would come up with some question about Ultimate Tag. Yeah. I want to learn like something a little bit more. And also, I would think about something having to do with TJ and Derek. I'm intrigued. Something above and beyond. You know, like how nice is it having two brothers in the league?
This was mine about TJ because I was thinking about this when he's coming on the station because I may throw Clint and show a couple of them. Like, hey, if you get through your stuff and you want to throw one more in, I do wonder. Now that TJ is being talked about as a guy who's on JJ's level, if not above JJ's level by some people just because of, you know, the injuries. But that at the very least, TJ and JJ, they have the same odds to win Defensive Player of the Year this year. So what's that competition like between the two of them? You know what I mean? Like, what's the nature of the competition? Is it friendly? Is it something, is this like for the first time my younger brother is on the same level as me? Because JJ's fairly... significantly older than TJ and Derek. He's like 5 years older than them.
Yeah, in sibling rivalry, there's usually like one or two siblings that are kind of think it's funny, and then there's one sibling who's all about the sibling rivalry.
Yeah. I hope that's not...
A lot of times it's the oldest one.
Yeah, I know, but I hope I hope for his mental health sake it's not Derek. Can you imagine if Derek is the one who's getting worked up about the rivalry? It's like, bro, you're never going to catch these two. Like, you've got to get in a healthier headspace, man. You're just not going to catch them.
By virtue of the position he plays, he's not going to ever get there.
Right, it's a dinosaur, The
Derek's got the advantage of he's the one with the child, so he becomes the favorite son now because he has because he produced a grandchild.
He did. The biggest reason you listener as a Texan, not a football Texan, as a resident of the state of Texas, should be rooting for college football to happen this fall. It's next.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.